Hi, and welcome to the Switch Natural podcast. My name is Andrea Dar, and on my journey to find non-toxic products, I've met some amazing people. People that are driven by their life experiences to create something new that can help others on their wellness journey. I'm sharing candid conversations so that you can be inspired too.
So you and I first connected when I fell in love with your alternative manicure set, which is Bare Hands, and it launched a few years ago. And I know that prior to that, your background is in design and you did something for many years before starting Bare Hands.
Yes.
Can you tell us how you came to start it and if you have any history in the beauty industry, what that has been?
Yeah, I mean, I actually have no history in the beauty industry. I started out as an artist and designer, and I actually was doing brand work and brand strategy. And, you know, I do have some experience in the retail side of things because I worked for a local retailer here in San Francisco. So that kind of got me really excited about product development and, you know, working with amazing teams. And I actually, my first entrepreneurial like sort of foray actually was an online art gallery. I don't know whether you and I talked about this before.
No, we didn't.
So in 2005, I actually started one of the very first online emerging art galleries. And it was fantastic. And, you know, it was another business that I kind of learned from scratch. And so, you know, I had friends who were artists and people doing commercial art. But it was, you know, I went back to advertising after doing that business. And then, you know, about 5 or 6 years ago, I was like, hey, you know, I just have this feeling that I'm seeing a lot of really great progress in clean beauty and skincare and holistic wellness. And I just hadn't seen that in nail care. So, you know, there was a lot of there to me, that was sort of a big disconnect. And as someone who always has really loved a natural nail routine, you know, I just started doing some digging around and I was like, you know, there's got to be a better way to buff your nails, because at this stage, you know, it can't be still the chamois and, you know, like the block buffers from, you know, the 70s and the 80s. So, you know, that's actually what kind of kicked off the journey for me into product development.
So interesting. And the art, it makes a lot of sense to me now that you tell me the art story, because the look and feel of everything that you're putting into Bare Hands is so beautiful. One of the things that I get a lot is, why is nail polish harmful? It's just, we're putting it on our nails and we're not rubbing it in. I think a lot of people can understand why skincare can be harmful.
Got it.
And people now understand that our skin absorbs a lot of what we're putting in. So I want people to understand that routes of exposure is super important, and it's different depending on the product type and the ingredient. And I think it would be really helpful if you gave us that background as to why nail polish is harmful.
Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, the absorption piece of the conversation is really important. You know, there have been a few recent studies that really link, you know, that the chemicals actually do absorb through your nail bed. And, you know, a lot of the either umbilical cord plasma studies or blood studies where you're actually showing like what chemicals are showing up in your bloodstream, that's when you're starting to kind of see the linkages between the chemicals that we apply. And a lot of them are sort of the plasticizers and the phthalates that actually, you know, are used, you know, in nail polish are actually now showing up in blood work and umbilical cord plasma. So, you know, I think there was a dialogue for a long time that, you know, it's like your nails were sort of dead and that nothing could penetrate your nail. And I think, you know, there definitely has been recent studies that have shown that, you know, it actually is, although it's not as highly absorptive as skin, you are also, you know, able to, you know, those chemicals actually are making it through. And, you know, a lot of it also too is the solvents in nail polish. And I think people don't necessarily, they think about solvents kind of in the removal stage, but they don't necessarily think about solvents in the formula.
Okay.
And the formula is actually made up of kind of four parts. It is like a film forming agent. There are pigments in there. There are solvents. and there are plasticizers, and the solvent is there actually to sort of suspend that material and to make it in liquid form. So, you know, you've got it in the bottle, it's in liquid form. And when you apply it, the solvent in the formulation actually evaporates out. And the plasticizer then is, you know, the rest of the ingredients then basically form into a hard plastic. So, you know, a lot of the solvents that you're smelling when you go into the salon, it's not just sort of the removal solvent, is also the solvent that's actually in, you know, in the formula itself for the paint. And, you know, and paints actually, I mean, if you think of paint, even just in its broadest sense, you know, even house paint, like the, you hear the term VOC, you know, obviously, you know, linked to right. house paint use, and, you know, the efforts that people have done to try to sort of lower those VOCs in house paints. So when you start to sort of make those connections, you're like, okay, there's VOCs obviously in nail polish. And so, you know, right. I think you start to think about paint more as a plastic essentially that has to go from a liquid to a solid, and that you get these challenges with all kinds of paint. You know, it's, you know, fine art paint, it's house paint, it's car paint, and it's nail polish. So if you kind of, you know, it's interesting once you start visualizing it like that.
Yes, absolutely. And I can remember when I was pregnant, before I really had dove into clean products, like my husband and I knew that we wouldn't paint the baby's room. Like, I didn't want to be around paint, but it was just, it wasn't, I guess it was just common sense, or just, I knew that that didn't seem right, you know, breathing in the exactly. room. And, yeah. you know, I wonder if whenever you were making this, did you have the knowledge about the plasticizers and the other parts of it, the solvents? Did you make that connection before, like, reading the research that the metabolites are found in urine and yes. in the last word?
Yeah. I mean, I have sort of absorbed a lot of research over time. You know, I didn't come fully informed into the product development phase. You know, what actually kicked me off was, you know, any testing that had been done with acetone. I mean, even just acetone, if you're looking at the studies that had been done with that, and anything that I was coming up was actually quite old from a government regulation standpoint. So, you know, from that standpoint, it hadn't been studied at all. And so, you know, again, going back to my art education, you know, a lot of the turpentines and the paint thinners were getting banned from educational use and studio use. And I was making that connection, and I was just like, why are these solvents, you know, dangerous, and why is this one solvent that we're using not dangerous? And that's actually one of the triggers that kind of got me down.
That got your wheels spinning. Yeah.
Yeah. Because again, I was making those two connections, and, you know, I think, you know, people are limiting acetone, but I think the overarching message is not about its ability to get into your bloodstream. It is that it dries out your nail, which is fine. You know, it does dry out your nail. And it is, you know, kind of damaging in that way. But I think when you look again from sort of a larger perspective about it, you know, it's not beneficial.
Right. It's not healthy for your nails. And you do manicures over and over and over, and then you're kind of left with ruined hands, right? Which is like the opposite of what you would want. What you're trying to do is to make them look healthy and beautiful. And you mentioned that the solvents were getting phased out of art uses, that sort of thing. We've kind of seen the industry, or just the marketing change. You know, brands are starting to make polishes that are free of. Mm-hmm. The big thing is endocrine disruptors. That's what comes to mind, I think, for a lot of people when they hear about nail polish, is these have endocrine disruptors, those plasticizers that you were talking about. But we know that, or you and I know that, even without those, so you have a tin-free polish, why it still might be harmful. And I think this is where you were going with your comparison to paint. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. There is a study done in 2018, so it's pretty recent. The Massachusetts Department of Public Health basically sponsored the Harvard School of Public Health. And, you know, they took, I think, about 50 or 60 polishes, and that were, you know, sort of deemed non-toxic, or, you know, anywhere between 10 and 13 free. And you know, the idea and the question was, hey, you know, if we test all these formulations, what are we going to find? Are we actually going to find harmful chemicals in the formulation? And, you know, they did the study and, you know, they did find trace amounts. And to me, like, that is part of the importance of the study, but like part of the comment that happened during, you know, after, you know, during the write-up, and, you know, the lead researcher basically was like, you know, we found that there's no clear information on whether these nail polishes are actually less toxic. But sometimes when one known harmful chemical was removed, the polish instead contained another similar chemical that may just be as toxic. So, you know, and I think that was another point in time for me, you know, before I launched the business. And I was like, oh, you know, this is something that I don't think a lot of people are aware of. You know, it made it into Time Magazine, which is where I found it.
Wow. So it's that regrettable substitution that you hear about. They just take one out and they put something else.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I understand, you know, knowing how products get tested right now, you know, it's, you know, even when you look at products and ingredients within a toxicology lens, you know, toxicology as a discipline is really meant to flag things that are either going to, you know, kill you or, you know, give you, you know, direct harm. So, you know, all of the nuance after surrounding that, if it's not killing you or giving you immediate cancer, then it's not designed to sort of give you the nuances of endocrine disruption or anything that is then happening. And this is something that I've learned recently. So that, you know, even if you are being diligent about testing chemicals in that way, you know, if you're doing it strictly, you know, with a toxicologist, you're not even getting, you know, any of what's happening with hormone disruption, you know, and when you think of those kinds of things, like those are, you know, those disruptions and the effects on your body happen over time, you know, and those are cumulative effects and also has to, you know, it factors in with, you know, what your overall toxin load is as well. And I'm, you know, you talk about this for sure. You know, it's, you know, if you are in an environment where you have a lot of toxin load already, then you have to sort of say to yourself, okay, you know, how much more can I control and how much more can I limit?
Right. And no one knows how much their bucket can handle, right?
Exactly. I would so love to have there be a measurement of everyone's different buckets, you know, so that you can like really see where you're at.
Even if you controlled everything that you could, that you knew about, there would still be unknowns.
For sure. And, you know, the recent news story that just came about with gas stoves and linking that with asthma, you know, my daughter, we live in a 1200 square foot apartment in San Francisco. The kitchen is right next to my daughter's bedroom and she has asthma. And, you know, it's one of those things where I didn't know, nobody really knew, you know, maybe some people did, but, you know, is that the exact cause of her asthma? We don't know. But, you know, when you think of it through that lens, you're like, oh boy, you know, you're always sort of learning and you're always trying to manage. And I think you're always trying to go into less harm as opposed to more harm, you know, based on what you know.
Yeah. It's a great way to approach it because there's so much that who knows what we'll look back and see that we were using today that's harmful. What comes to mind too is those studies that have been done for people who work in nail salons and how they experience the effect because it's so much more concentrated for them. And that to me is eye-opening. You know, they're experiencing it so much worse than someone that's going in once a week, but it still makes you think. Brings to mind pregnancy. From my perspective, what we hear is that during pregnancy, there's not really a hard line like in the media outlets. It's wishy-washy. It's, we can't really tell you if it's, they don't want to say it's bad. We don't want to say it's terrible, but we also don't want to give it our blessing and say that it's safe. And so I'm really curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, to be super honest, you have to admit that it's not good for you outside of pregnancy in order to make the argument that it's not safe for you within your pregnancy. And I think, you know, I think this is where the conflict comes, because, you know, if you start saying, hey, it's only not safe for you when you're pregnant, then the questions come of like, well, what happens when I'm not pregnant? So, you know, you have to kind of globally say, you know, come to grips with it and say, hey, this is probably not the great, and sort of like smoking, you know, I think. And, you know, when people came to grips with the fact that smoking wasn't good for your health, it was like, okay, it's globally not good for you. And then it's especially not good for you when you're pregnant. Mm-hmm. And to put it in that context. But I mean, one of the things that I kind of wanted to add in is that, you know, post-pregnancy and how you raise your children and especially your daughters, and what kind of safety habits you're modeling for them over the years, you know, and then you're sort of, you know, not only you're trying to protect them in vitro, but you're trying to protect them with healthy habits, you know, when they're girls. And, you know, how, if they see you, you know, continuously painting your nails and going to the salon, then you're normalizing that as a safe behavior for them. And then they're going to continue on.
That's such a good point. And you're normalizing it. Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone can say with confidence, this is a completely safe practice. So you're showing that something that might not be okay.
Yeah. Is okay.
Is just as simple as like brushing your teeth and whatever else.
Exactly. You know, my daughter has 14. And so okay. You know, ever since she was like 7, 8, 9 years old, you know, she's had friends who would go to the salon with their moms and paint, you know, like, you know, full on salon practice. And yeah, I mean, it's just interesting within the context. You know, I live in San Francisco, and sort of the context of organic food and safe skincare, you know, those things are right. Environmentalism, sustainability. Yes. So to have those dialogues like really front and center in school, in, you know, family conversations, and then to have these outlier behaviors is just really interesting to me. I mean, even just from a sustainability standpoint. And do you know, actually her name is Andrea too. She runs the Package Free Shop in
okay. Yes.
And she has a really engaged following. She got on to, a, you know, did a reel one day and was just like, hey, you guys, like, this is plastic. And I don't use it.
You didn't know.
And everybody, all the comments are just like, oh my God, what? You know, if you're 14, 15, 16, and you're trying to be a responsible, you know, environmentalist, like a lot of kids are. And that, you know, again, it's like you have this sort of conflicting habit. You kind of need to link those two up.
Communication is so important, and education and explaining that, because so many people would never make that connection. Like, you could be trying to support the environment wholeheartedly and have no clue that what you're putting on your nails is bad for the environment at the same time. I can't look at a nail ad anymore, or any ad really with hands and notice the nails. I mean, every time. Oh,
yeah. You probably follow Mark Hyman. He actually had kind of a nutritional, you know, sort of DIY for, you know, some snack. And the creator was like full on wearing nails.
The comment.
You know, it was like on both sides. It was just like, oh, she's expressing herself. But then some people are like, are you joking with me? Like, in this context with this audience.
I mean, it's interesting that people debated that in the comment section. And well, two things. One, I don't like to discourage people or make them feel like this is too much. Like, if you've been painting your nails every week since you were 12 years old, maybe younger, like this just may seem so out the box. And so it's like, reduce your exposure, right? Just think of different ways that you can beautify. And I love that your product kind of does that for people. It allows them to have that ritual. Your nails really come out so shiny.
It does. It kind of gives you that little aesthetic lift. And I think that's what, you know, it doesn't give you kind of the full color piece of it. But it's super funny. I have a creator who I work with, and she's helping me with TikTok. She's a marketer. And when I first started to get to know her, she is, you know, she's a full on acrylic nail lady. And, you know, I'm just like, you know, I'm just going to be interested to see what your journey is based on the fact that we're working together. Right. And so we were just, and I said to her, I was like, you know, you don't have to give this up in order to work with me. Like, I understand that's really challenging. This is, you know, this is a part of yourself that you are going to have time, you know, hard time changing. And then we just got on a Zoom call, and then I saw she didn't have natural, you know, naked nails, but she had a shorter gel manicure. And I was just like,
oh,
what's going on there? Did you take off your acrylic? She's like, yeah, I'm going to baby step from like acrylics into gels. And so, you know, hopefully over time, you know, she's going to do sort of alternating gels and dry gloss manicure. So that's my,
that must have made you feel pretty good.
Well, it kind of, it sort of does. And, you know, again, it's like, it's not for everybody. So it's like, you know, everybody, you know, isn't.
It's like, see somebody taking a step in the right direction. It's like super cool.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure.
Back to talking about, you know, having daughters and just beauty and health. I just find this such a fascinating topic, like the intersection of health and beauty. I don't know. I just think this is a really cool thing. And I would love to get your take on that, what it means to you.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I really like to focus on is nutrition. Because as you know, when people go natural with their nail care, it's, you know, they're much more hyper-focused on, you know, the health of their nails, like the strength of their nails, the ridging and the spots and things like that. And so, you know, I've gotten really, you know, sort of in depth with people about the effects of nutrition on, you know, the health of your nails, and specifically mineral absorption. And we're actually not getting as many minerals through our food because there aren't as many minerals in the soil. So things like zinc and magnesium and iron, you know, are just not getting into your body like they used to get in. So, you know, you see a lot of one thing that's kind of remarkable is that, you know, ridging itself, if you just took that, is, you know, generally linked to older people, but I see now so many younger people in their 20s and their 30s, you know, with nail ridging, which is really, you know, at that stage, you know, you really do kind of, you know, you want to be able to, you know, figure out what those linkages are. You know, I think with nutrition, it's really hard because, you know, everybody's different. Everybody absorbs different nutrients differently. Everyone's got a different diet. So, you know, there isn't an easy fix, you know, and I think that's the tough part where people are like, okay, I tried collagen or I tried biotin. Some of those things work. And, you know, so it's really kind of an experimentation, but, you know, I think, you know, I on my Instagram, I actually do a lot of cooking and I show a lot of cooking and, you know, is anybody making the linkage between nail health and nutrition? And, you know, I have a couple of geeks in there who are like, oh yeah, definitely. You know, that's when I see, you know, like beauty and wellness, like that's where I go, you know, for my product.
I agree so much because I think that these small things that just seem like inconveniences with our body is really, our body is telling us something.
Exactly.
I've been kind of on that focus for a while and it takes time. Like it's really something you have to commit to for years and forever really is tweaking and figuring out what your body needs to look and feel best. We talked about your design background a little bit and the design is so simple and intentional of the kits, the manicure kit and the pedicure kit. Can you talk a little bit about your process behind that?
It was really fun. I mean, I actually kind of, I approached it in a kind of like I would as a professional in the first case, you know, when you are working as a designer, you know, you're working in this team of specialists. So because I don't have a product design specialist, I kind of, in the beginning of the business was like, oh my goodness, I need a product designer. Like, of course I do, you know, I can't do this. And then very quickly found out that I could not afford such a luxury, like with the money that I had. And so I, you know, just little by little was like, okay, I have to do this on my own. And, you know, the shape of the polisher and, you know, again, that it was clear glass. And, you know, I actually originally wanted it to be white glass. And it was something that my suppliers and I worked on and they were like, no. And then the fact that it's clear actually is them. So that's fantastic. And so, but you know, it's great because you can actually see what's going on underneath and you
that's
can see,
right. Yeah.
Sort of working. And then the pouch itself actually was really hard because, you know, it needed to protect this little precious piece of glass, but then it also, you know, I was very adamant that I wanted the cuticle oil pen. And the pen is super important because, you know, although it is plastic and that is, you know, obviously challenging in a lot of fronts, the brush itself and that mechanism of being able to just dispense a little bit of oil on that brush is really important. And, you know, because it basically dispenses just as much as your skin can absorb, right? You know, like a lot of the other delivery methods with cuticle oil, it's like there are roll-ons, there are different, you know,
they're not right. They dispense way too much.
They just dispense way too much. And, you know, you wind up, you know, obviously you can kind of repurpose it in other areas of your body, but it's just not as effective. And I think one of the things you know, you have always these trade-offs with product design, efficacy, sustainability. And it was really, really important for me for people to adopt it, you know, and to use it and to really, really, you know, make sure that it was part of their routine. And so I needed it to be, you know, sort of look similar to a lot of their other products. And that's where the little white pouch came in, because it was like, oh, I can see this like sitting in somebody's purse next to their makeup. And so it looked like a little, you know, piece of beauty. And so, you know, that was really intentional. And, you know, I do get, you know, when I talk about sustainability in my method, you know, I do get a lot of conflicts and, you know, I do get a lot of comments of like, hey, you know, a lot of this is plastic. And, you know, you do right now, I do have to have those trade-offs. And actually designing a zero waste package for the kit. Oops, I shouldn't have said that. That's like kind of secret. It's going to happen.
Okay. To me, it's so much less plastic than, I mean, 95% of what is out there. And the glass file is so effective. I mean, you must have a very high quality piece of glass or some technology in the way that the rough side is. Like, it's very detailed and it works really well. And I have not found another nail file. Like, I've used glass files before, but yours I find to be much sturdier and just stronger. It works. It files the nails with fewer strokes is what I found.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that is, you know, so the challenge, the great thing about the product is it's very precise and it really kind of gives you that instant shine, which is great. The challenge with the product is that it's rigid. So it's kind of tougher to get around the curves of your nail. And it needs to be glass in order to have that, you know, basically it's a mineral blend that is like heat fused onto the glass. And because it's fused with such high heat, you know, only glass is able to withstand that. So, you know, glass is a rigid material. So again, it kind of needs to, a lot of people are like, oh, can it be flexible? And I was like, well, you know, when it's flexible, it gets into plastics and then, you know, those materials start to break down with that kind of, you know, so, you know, you're always sort of dealing with kind of the realities of material science in that stage. So, you know, I have had a lot of great suggestions on, you know, having like a little set of tools that are different shapes so you can get into different areas.
I find that the curve is nice. I find it's curved. I wish I could describe it. What is the shape to people that are just listening? How would you describe
it? Well, I kind of thought of it as a little moon shape. And in the very beginning, my packaging said it was like, I called it a moonstone. And then I sort of didn't think that that was really right. And so I removed it, but I have always thought of it as like a little moon shape.
Yeah. Is the reception of the pedicure set just as good as the manicure set?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, it's a different, surface on the glass. So it's like a completely different material that's fused to the glass. Yeah. They're two totally separate technologies. The abrasion for your feet is sort of similar, you know, in its goal, in the fact that it's very precise and you can like really, really get kind of a fine abrasion on there, as opposed to the, you know, a lot of the like cheese grater, you know, the one that, I mean, people love them. They do it, but like, it's a, you know, it just takes off like bigger chunks of skin, you know, to get super like candid about it, you know, so my product is like a little, you know, it's a finer, you know, you almost get kind of like a powder.
Yeah. It leaves like such a smooth surface.
Yeah. And I just, you know, a lot of people use sort of chemical peels for that as well. That just has never really appealed to me.
Oil is incredible for cuticles. Are you selling the oil alone or is it just can you only get it with the kit?
Yeah, no, that oil is sold in pairs of pens, and I have a 1 ounce oil that I'm actually like updating the packaging for. So it's actually not available on the site right now, but it's going to come in the next couple of months.
Nice.
You can actually get a bigger oil, but a lot of people are very addicted to the citrine scent. And like, I have a friend who just goes through it, and I, you know, always bring her like the little bottles of, you know, and she gets it and it just immediately starts sniffing it. She's like, this is like my, you know, just my happy.
It smells so good. And I've been using oils more and more over the last couple of years. Like I used to, oils just were kind of all the same to me, but now I can like really tell the differences in the way that they absorb and like the after feel, everything. It makes a difference.
No, it is cool. I mean, I've learned so much, and you know, because I worked with a formulator for the original, you know, cuticle oil, and then for the foot balm, I actually did that formulation myself with of the knowledge that I had picked up, and that that was, you know, people really love that product as well. It's
hard, really good too.
Hard to make. I actually still make it.
Oh, really?
In my kitchen. Yep. Yeah.
Pour it into the cardboard.
Yeah. So we do it, we hand pour it. And because it's cardboard, because it's paper, you know, a lot of people who have lip balm manufacturing kind of use this like squeegee technique, and they fill them all at once and then they kind of squeegee off the wax. But I can't squeegee it because it's paper, because it's biodegradable, right? So I wanted it to be biodegradable. And so you have to like, you know, sort of hand pour one of them. So someday I'll get a manufacturer to do that, and it'll be nicer for me.
It's cool to hear about the process. There's so much that goes into, there's so many details.
The sort of leap between home producing and the manufacturing process, because I'm making it right now, you know, I really didn't have a clear picture of what that entailed, and like the amount of sort of, you know, what kind of cash flow you needed and like what kind of investment you needed to have and what kind of quantities you need to purchase. And so it's, you know, it really does kind of affect like the trajectory of the business.
That's what you're able to do. Yeah. I spoke with someone, one of my earlier episodes, and she has a lab in her house. She makes skincare. And she actually moved it so that she could have a bigger space, I think, in her basement to continue to make it. And,
you know, there's a great deal of trust that needs to happen between you and your manager.
That's what she was saying. She has control over it.
So a friend of mine in San Francisco, Nina Hewitt, who runs Monastery, you know, she and her husband produce that product as well. You know, and one of the reasons is that, you know, they just really want to have control over that formula.
So is a lot of your time spent actually putting it together and making it? I mean, how do you do that?
So my husband and my daughter actually do most of the cuticle oil filling. So I will batch the oils. Like for instance, for the holiday season, this past holiday season, we started in August. And so from August to October, every single weekend, we were producing, you know, 1,000, 2,000 pens, you know, each weekend. Wow. And it was, I mean, it's a fun, like family activity, you know, like chat, and, you know, we kind of, you know, we have like little production schedules and stuff. So
is all of your sales direct to consumer, or do you have to give some to, are you selling through retailers that you have to make sure they have what they need?
Yeah. I mean, right now it's about 87% direct to consumer. I'm actually going to New York next week and to meet a bunch of new prospective retailers. So I'm excited about that. Actually, there's one in your town. There's one in Houston, Jenara. A lot of the folks who sell my kit are kind of like just lifestyle boutiques. So they'll have a little bit of accessories, some homeware, a little bit of maybe a little stationery, even a little apothecary. So, you know, there's shops that are just kind of discovery in that way. I have a couple of beauty retailers. I have a really great partnership with a company in Des Moines, Iowa. Okay. They have like a full spectrum of beautiful beauty products and just a really great kind of street level community, you know. And I think that's, you know, when you think about beauty shops, you think more of like New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles. But I think, you know, when you look at places like Des Moines, it's just like, hey, you know, this is a place of community.
In the early years when I was looking for clean products, that's how I found some of my favorites were in the, there was a little shop like you're describing that was in walking distance to where I was living at the time. And my babies were, I mean, I walked them twice a day because they would only sleep in the stroller. So I spent a lot of time going to that store, discovering things. And I can remember I had a few clean items. One of them was like Ilia, and there were two products.
It's just encouraging that like discovery in that community.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me today. I love hearing about your brand and what you've done. And I think everyone I recommend it to loves it.
Oh, amazing. Well, thank you so much. I mean, you're such a, you know, just an incredible advocate for me, you know, just from, you know, not just the product side, but also just the awareness side. So thank you so much for what you do. And I've super enjoyed talking with you.